We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Thank you, Kevin, who is in for Peyton, who had Ross in for him. Excellent job by Ross filling in for Pepe. And now we got Kevin, who isn't he the one who's always sleeping up front?
Yeah.
Is that Khaki Kev?
Mm-hmm, that's Khaki Kev, the one who is resting on the couch trying to make sure that he doesn't oversleep.
Kevin, get on the mic here for a second.
Yeah.
How many times a month do you think you sleep on that couch in there? Is it twice?
It would really vary, but yeah, I would probably say 2 to 3 times if I just got back-to-back shifts. It's because I live in Fort Worth, so sometimes for gas, it just makes sense.
Mm. Okay. All right. We're going to have to get him a special fan cot there.
Yeah, we're going to need a cot. What's the that thing can't be comfortable. And it's probably it's not the cleanest thing.
It's not,
and that pillow,
it's not terrible.
That's a communal pillow right there.
Tolo shout-outs. My boy Dwayne stopping by. Samuel from Terrell getting ready to head on over to work. The best griller out here, it is not me. It is Mark, who had to get a Sean and RJ tumbler. Another G-Bag flag, this time from Michael. I'm signing this thing with great regret. And then we had Sean, an all-time Tolo, who is always showing up, and Cheyenne as well. So thank you all for turning it on, leaving it on. We are at Firehouse Number 1 in Richardson, brought to you by Whataburger, Frazier Roofs and Gutters, and Firehouse Movers. Come and grab the tumblers while you can. Cowboys insider Bobby Belt, empty the notebook.
Yeah, so Micah Parsons was at his youth football camp in Pennsylvania. He puts one on every year. And very grateful to Nick Farabaugh, who sent over this audio. And shout out to Nick Harris as well from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram for getting this over to us. He had spoke to media gathered there about a bunch of different things related to his camp, things like that. And then they did manage. I was a little concerned because they spent the first 5 minutes asking him, like, what do you think about TJ Watt, how good is he, and stuff like that. Well, they actually got into contract talk. So this is the first clip here. Micah Parsons speaking with media near Harrisburg on why he continues to show up for offseason activities without a contract.
I know God got my back, you know. He took me this far. He's not ready to be done with me, and I see the strength and the will he keeps putting inside of me. So, you know, to me, I'm not really fazed by anything. I'm going to just keep doing things the right way. And let everything play the cards how they're going to be dealt. Like, you know, things is going to play out how they're meant to play out. I don't think there's anything you can to do to change or change someone's mind. You know, things are going to play out the way they're going to play out. So, to me, I just try to do everything's right.
This is a little interesting, a little funny the way he just talked about that. He says, look, you know, things are going to play out the way they play out. You can't really do anything to change their mind or anything like that. It's funny because later on, and we'll get to this clip here in a second, Micah starts saying the exact opposite. Like, well, it's on you to change their mind if they don't think you're worth it. But there is a question right now. Obviously, he's on the fifth-year option. When will they get a deal done? Micah Parsons, do you feel like you are undervalued?
I look at it like people don't see your value. You don't cry and, like, lay up. Like, you just work harder. Like, you got to show people your value. I just think that's, like, the difference. Like, okay, and, like, I just work.
Which is a little funny. There's fluff there, obviously. Whenever a guy's talking and getting asked about contracts, he's trying to just basically fill space and not get in trouble. That's what Micah Parsons is clearly trying to do. That's how you get two back-to-back quotes that are so diametrically opposed. It's like, you can't change anybody's mind. It's like, well, it's on you to change their mind. But I think it's clear that the biggest thing that you can take away just from this and what we're going to hear from some other stuff here in a second is that Micah Parsons is taking a Dak-like approach to the contract extension compared to CD, which is CD looked at it as, not only is the injury risk too great, he thought he needed the absence to boost his leverage. He felt like he wasn't going to get the deal that he needed unless he put pressure on them to say, hey, if I'm not there, maybe I'm not ready. Look what you guys are missing. Micah's on the flip side. Micah seems to be taking the approach that Dak did, which is, I'm going to get paid regardless. Are you going to not pay me? You're not going to do that. I know that's not one of your options. So I'm going to show up. I'm going to be ready and know that the money's going to come and know that it probably costs you more in the end.
Well, listen. Where'd you say he was?
Pennsylvania.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He could have told them anything, and they would have gone along with it. Because as I said yesterday, people in Central PA are barely people.
So, Kevin Hagelin wanted to talk to RJ about that after the show ended. He's like, "So back to Hershey."
Back to Hershey. he always goes back to Hershey.
And Micah was showing off the physique photos yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He shredded up, no doubt about it. Look, I'm tired of this. I know everyone's tired of it. The only reason I'm going to comment on it anymore is because what Broadus texted the other day over the compounding defensive line problem of Ezeraku not being there as well. Yeah. At some point in time now, we got to take it to Jerry and Steven Jones, and Atolo suggested this question yesterday. How much are you hurting your football team? Because to me, at least with – I understand the Ezeraku hold up more than the Micah one. You're not going to win the Micah one.
No.
You're just not. So
Ezeraku is – that is clearly player – owner, I don't want to say collusionary, but it's like, hey, look, we're drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, this is a league precedent.
Yeah.
We're second round picks, right? One Texans pick.
And the first two picks.
First two picks. Got fully guaranteed deals. No one else in the second round has signed. So, you know, I can't really blame the Cowboys for that. This is something that sets the tone of the league moving forward. But how much you compromise in the beginning of your season and your season with these two guys not at camp?
I do think it was much more detrimental for CD not to be there last year. Because, I mean, there is a cohesion that comes.
Well, Zach said it hurt him, too.
Zeke
got hurt by it. When Zeke sat out all year up until the start of 2019, he did not play. Yeah.
Well, because he was in Cabo on a golf course.
That's true.
Right? On a driving range. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, I mean, I think to me, if you're an edge rusher and you're still training and you're doing – now, you can't mimic everything. You know, it probably his get back, time frame is probably much less.
What's going to happen with these second round picks?
So next week, when the Cowboys get to training camp, I would assume that other teams are going to take a similar approach. Given that everybody knows this negotiation has kind of been put in a weird spot, thank you, Houston Texans, for getting this started with Jaden Higgins. But if you look at the way the league allows guys to operate even without a contract, if they all sign waivers, they can basically have waivers that they can sign and they can still operate and they can still practice. I would imagine a good majority of them are going to sign waivers and be out there for practice and continue negotiating. But
when do they start losing real money? Because if I'm the owners, I'm the league, I'm just going to wait and be like, you're a second round pick. You probably don't have much of nothing. You're desperate. You're way more desperate for this money then first-round picks, you will show up.
Not until regular season, probably. That's when they would start losing money. Because these are not guys who, you know, are veterans who are getting fined for not being there or they've got a contract. This is a contract that's never been signed. He's never signed a professional contract in his career. All right, Micah Parsons speaking at his youth football camp in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And there were a couple of these cuts here that I think address something that Cowboys fans have been concerned about or worried about, the idea of these other edge rushers falling and these other deals coming into place and how that might end up costing the Cowboys a little bit more money.
TJ, Hendrickson.
Right. TJ's been holding out. Trey Hendrickson, same sort of way. Mike is waiting on a new deal. And he was asked about that, why he thinks edge rushers are fighting for new contracts right now.
Over a period, every grouping did it. Wide receivers was last year. You know, you kind of see the corners this year and last year. I mean, everyone goes through it. I just think, but it is a lot of money, man. So it's just one of those things. We kind of know what it is. It's business at the end of the day.
Good that he has that kind of perspective. The bigger question, though, is going to be, does that money, do those contracts end up pushing your price up at all? Micah, on if he's waiting for the other edge rushers to sign.
His day numbers got nothing to do with mine, and my numbers ain't nothing got to do with them. I'm younger. Hutchinson's coming off an injury. Everyone's circumstances is completely different. Hutch is coming off his third year. Usually guys wait 4 years. So it just all depends why. I mean, he's up there with Miles. So, it's different. Everyone's circumstance is different.
It's an interesting way to talk about it.
Do they usually wait 4 years, though? I mean, didn't the Jets just give two guys after their third year?
So, third year, I think what he means is, in his situation with the Cowboys don't generally sign somebody after the third year. So with the Cowboys, they're going to get you through 4 years up to your option, and then they'll look at it.
But why does it feel like the Cowboys negotiation has taken this dead period off as well? And I mean, they're probably
Jerry
talking.
Doesn't say he his philosophy has been he's been consistent with this. I don't have to yet. Like they're, I'm not missing that. We're not missing anything. They're not missing a game.
Like Overshown yesterday tweeted a picture of the practice fields in Oxnard. Like they're about to get on the plane.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're getting close. I mean, next week.
What is going to change? What do the Cowboys think could change for them next week versus last week?
Sense of urgency.
Sense
from
of
who?
Both. I mean, the Cowboys don't. Jerry's been consistent. Deadlines make deals. I don't have to pay you yet. I don't. We haven't missed anything. According to the way he views it, they haven't lost anything.
Here's where they miscalculate. I almost think that they're operating in an NFL 15 years ago in which the player was frightened to lose a game check, in which a player was terrified not to start game one of the regular season. It's more detrimental, in my opinion. It's Micah's money. It's way more detrimental for the Cowboys not to have him week one than Micah Parsons missing week one. Because whatever Micah Parsons misses, we know the money gets made up. So that's the ultimate leverage at the end of the day here. You're in a win-now position. Everyone comes for your head. Everyone's sick and tired of the drought, except for Steven, who, you know, air-quoted the drought. You have to win more than Micah has to win. That's the way I'd be talking about and thinking about it if I was Micah's agent. So ultimately, at the end of the day, you have to have me on the field for game one. I'm going to be rich no matter what.
Right. I think what the Cowboys would say specific to this situation is Micah has not demonstrated he's going to miss any time if we don't get it done right away. CD was showing you he
wasn't showing up. So Micah's itch is what they're thinking about.
I think they're just saying, let's see what he does. If he doesn't show up, all right, that gives us a sense of urgency. But right now, he has... Like, he's the only one who's shown an itch he needs to scratch where he's standing off to the side and he goes, give me a helmet, let me get in there.
Yep.
And so I think for them, they feel like, all right, we don't have to pay it right now. And the Cowboys' philosophy in general is always the longer we wait to pay something, if prices are always going up, the longer we stay on the cheaper deal and the more money we save. That is the financially prudent thing to do. Even if prices are always going up, because we stayed on the cheaper deal longer. And that's what's more important than getting the cheaper deal earlier.
Inside the Star with the return of Bobby Roberto Belt, live with the 6 a.m. Club, the Thursday edition of Sean and RJ from Firehouse Number 1 in Richardson. Brought to you by Firehouse Movers, Frazier Roofs and Gutters, and Whataburger, already feeding all of the Tolos. And we have a lot of Tolos along with that coffee to go along with it. We got a brand new concert ticket giveaway during the 7 o'clock expressway. But this is my most exciting segment of the day coming up.
Already.
People think that it's cancelable. Are the ESPYs back? The audio you have to hear from the host of last night's festivities next on Sean and RJ.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it?
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
How long away until Oxnard, California?
For us, it is 11 days, baby. Now I think K&C is out there next week. So for them, it's less than 11 days. It's like five, but, for us, 11 days, man, I remember it used to be like, hey, just get me to camp, get me to training camp. And now it seems like, hey, the off season extends a lot longer. You know, the NFL off season, obviously it's a 12 month. It's basically 11 months, really. It's like 10 months and four weeks. And then you get a month and a half off, which is what we're in right now. And that's the time where idle hands become the devil's workshop.
Are you saying this has felt like a tougher offseason to get through?
No. I'm saying it used to be like that. Now, I feel like this is, it's a breeze. It's a breeze.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the show.
Yeah.
As well. And having Bobby and Pepe fill up some more airtime. So we got a couple more deals yesterday. And RJ, of course, looking at this through a Dallas Cowboys lens. Right after paying Garrett Wilson, what, $31 a year? The Jets locked up the other side. Sauce Gardner, 4 for $120, becomes the NFL's highest paid
corner at 30.1 a season. And then the Chiefs went and gave guard Trey Smith 4 for 94, highest paid guard in NFL history, $70 million in total guarantees.
Yeah, and like, you know, Trey Smith, like you said, that major deal, and they did, you know, they kind of did the Jerry thing there. They let him get on the tag. You know, Jerry loves to let them get on a tag. And then they sign him, but then they had to pay for it, and he gets just under $25 million a year.
Yeah, it's actually Trey Smith, the one that we need to be focusing on over the bigger name and Sauce.
Yeah, Sauce, you know, obviously, you know, you look at the corner market, it's totally different.
You're going to pay Deron Bland eventually, but we're not going to talk about these numbers.
Right. But, you know, there's four guys making $20 million. The rest are at 19 below at the guard. That's pretty low money for them, you know, from a standpoint of like compared to a lot of the other positions. But it also means that when Tyler gets there, that number's going to go to 25, 26, whatever. And, you know, I guess they could have gotten this done with him, right? I mean, he's eligible. They already picked up his fifth year, right? They already did that. So I guess he's eligible now, and they could theoretically, if they wanted to, sign him. But what the Cowboys are going to do is they're going to futz around. And here we're going to be in, I guess it would be in next year's camp, where him probably holding out. That's where we're going to wind up being.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, we're just going to do this again. And we'll do this for a fourth straight year. We did it with Zach, and we did it with Dak and CD last year, and we're going to do it with Micah with this year, and then we're going to do it with Tyler next year.
And as Brian brought us texted yesterday in B-Low, the belt, you're looking like you're going to camp without two of your most important, your best pass rusher for sure in Micah, and now Ezeraku with this second round problem throughout the entire league, and you're starting off without a pass rush.
You are. I mean, it's
buckle up, Dante Fowler.
Yeah. And you know, this what you're always concerned with when guys miss camp is injury. You know, you're just concerned with their injury. Now, I'm sure they're doing stuff in the offseason. I know they were here, but, you know, is Micah going to be at Penn State? Is he at Penn State right now training, right? You know, is he at Boston College? Is he at BC? You know, where are they? You know, and where are they going to be? Are they going to be in Cabo on the driving range next to Zeke? When it gets to training camp, you know, I have no idea, right? Shamar Stewart, Cincinnati, is apparently down at A&M, right? He's training at A&M. Guys are training if they're not signed.
Well, so Shamar may be going back.
Well, he may be going back, yeah. But they're still training, right? That's the whole point. But there's no such thing as being able to emulate camp game speed just by doing drills and working out.
Albert Breer talking about this because Nick Harris got some quotes from Micah talking at a jersey retirement at his high school. And he said, I know God's got my back. He took me this far. They're going to play out the way they're meant to play out. For me, I just try to do things the right way. But Micah talking about how he's feeling during the negotiations, I just work harder. To me, I look at it like, if people don't see your value, you don't cry and lay up. You just work harder. You got to show people your value. I just think that is the difference.
So Albert Breer, and he fell victim. I like Albert. He fell victim to the cowboy click. He did. because he
it's
did
not
his,
C-L-I-Q-U-E. It's
no.
C-L-I-C-K.
Yeah, he said the 10 things that I think about and talk about when it comes to NFL training camps and to look at when it comes to training camp. And I'm like, okay, you know, what are the 10 things? I don't know, Aaron Rodgers, Travis Hunter, Shador Sanders. Like, all those are, to be bigger stories than Micah Parsons' contract. What's Aaron Rodgers doing in camp? Like, how's that going to work? Obviously. Travis Hunter, hey, we want to see him for the first time. Shador, is he going to be able to be the number one? Those are all infinitely bigger stories than Micah Parsons. But Micah's going to get the clicks, and he knows that, and they know that. But talking about his deal. And he even adds, like, this would be the fourth time in 7 years for this franchise, because Zeke in 2019, that they have done this summer-long contract dispute, and they've never been better off for it, ever. And, you know,
never been better off for it. Okay, so they haven't won out doing this.
Right. The team has never won out doing this. 2019, they got Zeke in camp to help Jason. That was kind of a disaster year. Dak and CD last year, that was kind of a disaster year. Zach the year before, he had one of his worst years.
So it's never really worked out for them. But, you know, Parsons showed up for some of the OTAs and the mini camp. So that's good. That's good. But this is another situation where, you know, Jerry steps in it, saying he never heard of the agent, and that they're not going to get a deal on the contract. They're not going to get some great low ball rate because Micah doesn't have to, and he knows that, and they know that.
Yeah, I don't care about this story anymore until I know it negatively affects or impacts him and them during the season.
Mm-hmm.
Once he comes out and he's like CeeDee Lamb and says, no, it hurt me. I'm rusty. I'm behind. I missed my assignment. I wasn't around training camp to get used to Eberflus's system. Then I'll care. Then I'll be ticked off about it. Otherwise, I'm sure like many people, just tired and done with it. What is Vegas doing with us now?
Man, I think Vegas is missing the boat here. Cowboys are, I got this from a text from my handicapper. He says Cowboys are plus 750 to win the NFC East. I was like, that seems a little low.
Yeah, especially after for 25 to 30 years, it's a guaranteed winner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They alternate winners, so there's no way Philadelphia, based off history, wins it again this season.
No chance. No chance they win it again this season. That's a given. We know that. That's already set in stone. They're not going to win the division this year.
So then you bet the 750, or are you just scared of Washington?
Well, I'm not really scared of Washington either. I'm going to bet the 750.
All right.
There's no doubt about that. But for reference, this is how low that is. The Titans are plus 800 to win the AFC South.
Wow. Wow. Now, putting us next to Tennessee, basically?
Yeah. Now, divisions matter, right? Divisions matter. You can get the Cowboys lower than 750 other places. I think they're as low as 5-1 in some spots. But this casino item is at 750. But look, the fact that those two are so close together is basically Vegas telling us that they have no chance to win the East, which I just completely disagree on. A, they're still pretty good when healthy. B, when they have their quarterback, they win 10 games a year for the most part. And then C, this division never has a repeat champ. So whether you get the Cowboys at 5-1, 7-1, 8-1, doesn't matter. It's a value bet at this point. You are to have a quarterback that is pretty clearly, when he's healthy, a top 12 player in the league, have odds like that, implied odds like that, that's where you find your best values.
So if what's the over-under right now with wherever you bet that you could get them on? And if you had one bet to make, them winning the East at plus 750 or over 8.5 wins, which one would you jump at first?
I think it would be over 8.5 wins.
Me too.
If I was going to bet one.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to worry about other people. The Eagles could go out there to go 14-3. All right. You're not going to, this Cowboy team's not going to win 14 games. But yeah, I think that would be it.
All right. If Bobby was here, he would just be shaking his head at the Washington Commanders because the Terry McLaurin deal will keep it inside the East. It's still not done. And he sounds very, very disappointed. I want to be here. I want to make that clear, but it takes two to tango. And I'm just confused. Like, when you have the type of production that I have, I would just like things to be upfront and honest. So he's kind of talking about a lack of transparency, but he updated the Commanders media and let them know things are not looking close to being done for the Commanders receiver. Coming off 82 catches, 1,000 yards, 13 touchdowns at the age of 29 still.
Man, I'll tell you this. This is kind of the power of the Cowboys. We've barely heard a thing about Terry McLaurin's contract in comparison to Micah Parsons.
Yeah, no, I mean, not
even close.
Not even barely, yeah.
No, barely. And, you know, that's a really, really good, you know, number one wide receiver.
You think he's a good one? I mean, no doubt one.
He's a one in the sense that
he's a special two. But what is a one? Who are we arguing about with Bobby as being a one? A few weeks ago. Oh, Pickens.
Yeah, George Pickens. Pickens or McLaurin? He's better than Pickens. He's better than Pickens.
I agree.
He's a one in the sense that, trying to think who I would compare him to. I mean, he's better than Drake London.
Yeah.
Right. He's
so is, far.
Is he? He's not. I don't. Age aside, you know, he's not better than Mike Evans. But with the age, he might be. You know, although he's not young either. I don't know. Is he on the level of like what Keenan Allen would be when healthy? In his prime?
That's a difficult thing for me in this discussion is where to slot him.
Yeah, I think a lot of his...
So let me just go down the receivers and then you stop me when you tell me where he fits. Jamar is at 40. No. Jefferson, Lamb. DK's at 33. Like, Terry McLaurin could argue.
I could make that argument.
He could argue like, yo, I want 33. I have better numbers than DK. I'm more consistent. Garrett Wilson's 32 and a half. He could argue.
He's done more in his career.
He could argue. So that's the difficult thing. Yeah. Like, he's not a top five receiver, but you're sitting there in that 32, 33 range. Amon-Ra is at 30. Ayuk is at 30. And he can say.
He's the same.
I'm kind of the same. That's what's tough about him.
Yeah, it is difficult. Because also, again, you know, and, you know, Amon-Ra has had a quarterback. Ayuk has had a quarterback. Garrett Wilson's not. McLaurin's not. Some of those guys, if they haven't had quarterbacks, then how do you really know what they are?
All right, we have the golf apology and story being told. The explanation the entire world was waiting on and Shaquille O'Neal's threat towards RG3. The audio you have to hear with Sean and RJ.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Next.
All right, here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic day as we're about to talk Cowboys here. Joseph Hoyt, Dallas Morning News, joining us here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, Joseph. How the heck are you?
He's in the building!
I'm doing well, fellas. First, though, I got a quick gripe. I was listening to that top 10 segment for Rated R movies, and I'm an Oregon guy, so I got to say, the fact that Animal House didn't make it really kind of hurt me a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I thought it should have been there, man.
Sorry about that, Joseph. It was number 11. But hey, go vote for it on Ranker. Get it up into the top 10.
Yeah, we will persevere. So
it's not the first time Woolchuck's messed something up like that. You know that, Joseph.
Yeah, it happens. But hey, you know, we appreciate Woolchuck for it. And it was a good list. I think Animal House needed to be there, but that's okay.
It's fair. It's fair. It was kind of biased towards the present. There's some classics back there in the 70s. Now, speaking of these Cowboys, though, as we get set to head to Oxnard, what is it that's top of your mind? What's the most interesting storyline to cover from a writer perspective as we head to camp?
Yeah, I think the big one is obviously the Micah Parsons contract. You know, he had his retirement high school jersey ceremony today. You know, and back home in his county, they're going to have a Micah Parsons Day they announced today. But, you know, right now we're still looking at a contract negotiation that just hasn't had a lot of movement. You know, I think there's been an understanding from both sides. Hey, we're going to make Micah Parsons the highest non-paid quarterback in NFL history. It's a matter of when, not if. But the when continues to be elusive. And I think, you know, we kind of headed into last training camp thinking maybe CeeDee Lamb and Dak could stretch out, you know, as far as they did. My question is whether or not it will stretch with Micah Parsons. This is a guy that wants to, you know, we saw him in minicamp put the helmet on when he wasn't supposed to and get out there for a few drills. You know, he wants to play. He wants to be a part of things. He wants to learn Matt Eberflus's system and be a leader. And it's hard to do that from the sidelines. And I just don't think it's very comfortable for him. So I'm just curious to see if it will stretch out as far as some of the other contract negotiations have. And then I got my eyes on just George Pickens and the relationship between not only him and Dak Prescott, between him and CeeDee Lamb. I'm really curious to see just kind of how they invoke the 1A, 1B method between these two guys. You know, is this going to be a thing with George Pickens where, you know, you'll see him as a big slot and then bounce out to the outside and him and CeeDee Lamb are kind of interchangeable pieces? Or is it going to be, you know, you're over here and you do that? And I'm just curious to see what George Pickens looks like as we start to put the pads on and accelerate a little bit.
Hey, Joe, when you talk about with Micah holdout, well, how about what's going on with their second-round pick, too? So you're talking about two of the, you know, the quality of the two, your probably your best pass rushers. Neither one of them might not be in camp.
Yeah, and we saw the Chargers, you know, with Trey Harris, he kind of made the first stand saying, hey, I'm going to hold out until I can get that fully guaranteed fourth-year deal too. And that's the guy that was picked after Donovan Ezeraku. And, you know, I think it's going to be fascinating. You know, I've kind of talked to people, and it's been a little bit quiet on the Ezeraku front.
Sure.
I think that, you know, I think all eyes right now in the second round are on Tyler Shuck in the Saints, and that's the guy that was picked before Donovan Ezeraku. But I think a lot of people are going to want that guaranteed fourth year. You've seen the last few years an acceleration on guaranteed money for these second-round picks. You know, it used to be, hey, only, you know, a partial amount of that third year. Sometimes, you know, even you go back not too long ago, and that third year wasn't guaranteed. Now you got guys trying to get that full, you know, fully fourth guaranteed deal thanks to what happened in Houston and in Cleveland with Carson Schlesinger and Jaden Higgins. So I think that, you know, right now these second-round picks are at a standstill. All these agents are kind of waiting and watching, you know, seeing which team is going to be the first one to also bend. You know, if Trey Harris gets a deal done as a fully guaranteed pick for that fourth round, there's no way Donovan Ezeraku is taking anything less. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch and see if he'll hold out as well.
Well, we just got the big Trey Smith contract for the guard in Kansas City. I'm sure Tyler Smith was keeping tabs on that. You were at that Offensive Line Masterminds event. We referenced some of the quotes in that article, Joe. I mean, it was hilarious with Tyler Booker and Tyler Smith. But what stood out to you from that event?
Yeah, I think from a Tyler Smith perspective, and it's kind of, you know, you kind of look at it in conjunction with, you know, what Jeremy Fowler's ESPN piece said about Tyler Smith being one of the top offensive guards in the NFL. I think you talk to Tyler Smith, and his big lesson from Zach Martin is never stop ascending. You know, it's never stop working, never stop trying to be the best. I remember last year, you know, we talked with Tyler Smith, and he's like, there's a lot I got to work on, I got to do this. He was saying the same things again kind of this time too, and I think he's understanding, you know, kind of at the ripe age of 24 years old, that this is his time to shine, that this is his time to take another step. And this is kind of a guy that's relentless in his pursuit of being one of the top guards in the NFL. He, you know, another guy that's going to get paid, as you mentioned, Wolchuk. This is someone that is going to probably be the highest paid guard in NFL history, you know, next year at, you know, enter date part of training camp when that comes to fruition. Another guy, matter when, not if, you're going to pay him. So I think Tyler Smith is ready to go. And I think the trio of him, Cooper Beebe, and Tyler Booker, you know, if Tyler Booker can be what everyone's kind of expecting him to be, and kind of from talking to people, there's high hopes despite not seeing him in pads yet with the Cowboys. This is a trio that could really kind of lead this team, I think, frankly. And I think that in terms of the running game, this is something that could be leaned on as well.
I saw an article, I think it was NFL.com today, and you did a lot of awesome draft work with the LLS and now with the Dallas Morning News. We're talking with Joseph Hoyt, but it was rookies under the most pressure to succeed immediately. And I thought Tyler Booker's got to be up there. I wonder your thoughts on that, because we, I believe, are kind of all assuming this is plug and play and this guy's going to hit the ground running, whereas last year maybe we had unfair expectations on Guyton, who probably wasn't ready.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction to remember, too. I mean, if Chuma Adoga doesn't get hurt in the middle of training camp, does Tyler Guyton start week one against Cleveland? I'm not sure. You know, I think everyone was kind of aware of the raw development here. I think people got high hopes, you know, especially when you saw him in that first practice against Micah Parsons. I think with Tyler Booker, you know, in terms of whether or not he has pressure, he is obviously going to be a plug and play starting guy, and I think that's the pressure. But I think this is a guy that everyone just looks at and says, hey, this, the floor is high. You know, I think, you know, the expectations are that this guy will be ready to go. He'll be prepared to be, you know, at worst, an average NFL starting right guard, which is, you know, I guess that's a lot of, you know, pressure to be. And I think the Cowboys need that, especially when you consider what they have at the running back position right now. But I have a lot of confidence in Tyler Booker, frankly. And I think, you know, I asked him during minicamp, you seem very prepared. Like, has anything at the NFL level surprised you? And he goes, honestly, no, because I was prepared at an NFL factory at Alabama. Before that, I was prepared at a college factory at IMG. I've been in constant pursuit of this goal, and I'm ready to take advantage of it. And, you know, nothing I've seen from Tyler Booker sways me to think differently, frankly.
Hey, Joe, what kind of a play caller do you expect Shoddy to be?
That is a fascinating question, Brian. And I think I heard you talk about this a little bit in terms of, hey, what zone or gap scheme,
sure,
kind of what they'll do in terms of the running game. And I thought that was such a great point because, frankly, we don't know. I think with Schottenheimer, I think everyone wants to say, hey, it's going to be Marty Ball 2.0, right? They're going to run the ball. You look at what LT had. This is going to be – that's Brian Schottenheimer. But you kind of talk to people and, you know, you kind of look at what happened in Seattle the last time he was a play caller. You know, this is the guy that wanted to let Russ cook. You know, and Pete Carroll was like, hey, hold on. You know, we want to run the ball and get back to that. And ultimately that disagreement between two guys that have a ton of admiration and respect for each other led to their kind of divorce in Seattle. So Schottenheimer's had some time away. You know, he's talked about how he studied the McVays, the Shanahans, those kind of running schemes. Obviously, he brings in a guy in Clayton Adams who's got, you know, a lot of multiplicity to his running game, you know, throughout his history. But I thought you hit the nail on the head, Brian, when you talked about what they have and kind of, you know, what they've drafted. Will that kind of dictate more of a gap scheme than a zone scheme? Can they be as multiple as Clayton Adams wanted to be in Arizona in year one? I'm not sure. And I'm just really curious to see kind of what the shoddy ball really looks like. And I kind of wrote about this too. If you look at what they have in, you know, in the running back position, and if you look at what they got in George Pickens outside to go with CeeDee Lamb, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if instead of being a team that, you know, harps on wanting to run the ball and open up the pass that way, if there's a little bit of the vice versa element kind of going on, if they push the ball downfield with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens and Jake Ferguson over the middle to kind of set up a running game, which, to be honest with you, doesn't have a lot of confidence right now based on who's in the backfield.
It's Joseph Hoyt of the Dallas Morning News here with you on The Fan. How confident are you Dak Prescott will have a better season statistically than he did last year?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident about it, but I think until you see just how, you know, ready to go he is in terms of his mobility, it's kind of hard to 100% bank on it. You know, you saw it. I think Dak Prescott is just so polarizing. You saw NFL executives and coaches anonymously tell Jeremy Fowler that this is a top 15 QB, maybe 14 in the league. And then, you know, you saw an NFL top 100. He's number 79, despite only playing in 8 games last season because of what he's done historically. I think Dak Prescott's mobility and his ability to kind of move within the pocket is going to be so key for him this year. I think if he can do that, especially with some questions out of left tackle, you know, Terrence Steele's, yeah, right tackle, trying to take another step and kind of get back to, you know, being a better pass blocker. Like, I think Dak's going to have to move. And, you know, everything we've seen so far, you know, I saw him at his annual camp for kids out in South Lake, and he looks in incredible shape. You know, I know this is the time of year where everyone's in the best shape of their life, but Dak Prescott coming off that hamstring injury looks good. You know, I'm curious to see just how mobile he can be. And I think with having a certified deep ball threat in George Pickens, this could be a match made in heaven. You know, Dak Prescott, you know, over the last 5 years, according to PFF, is a top 5 deep ball thrower. George Pickens, you know, had the most contested catches in the NFL when he was a rookie. Last year, he had the best PFF grade on passes 20-plus yards more downfield. Like, you know, I tend to think that George Pickens can be his Michael Gallup, but more talented, if everything goes right in terms of the kumbaya kind of nature we have with George Pickens off the field right now. But I think that there is a real opportunity for Dak Prescott to go back to his 2023 form.
That would be awesome. You know, and I was wondering, because he's never had two guys quite like this, as good as Gallup's year was. Do you think Lamb plus Pickens and a healthy Ferguson can make them so dangerous that they could have a let's call it a damn good offense, even without a really good running game, an offense good enough that could hold up against, you know, playoff defenses?
I think so, but I think you might run into a little bit of a danger there, because like the tandem that tandem makes me think of what Cincinnati's had recently with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins, right? Like, they have been able to score. That's not been the problem. You know, the running back has actually not been that big of a problem because, you know, you can throw the ball over the field. But, you know, when you're kind of scoring as much as they have, the defense has to step up too. And, you know, I think defensively the Cowboys have a lot of questions. And I think that that's going to be huge for Matt Eberflus's group. You know, I think the defensive line, you know, they did some things. They took more of a quantity than quality approach, I thought, this offseason. And they're kind of hoping that the collective can do more in the running game. I do like Jack Sanborn coming in. I think Kenneth Murray, as long as he's going downhill, there's potential to use that first-round pick athleticism. But you look in the secondary right now, and I don't know if there's more of a boom or bust situation for them right now. If everyone comes back healthy for the secondary, if you get a healthy Savone Rebel, a guy that should have been a first-round pick if not for an ACL, if you can get, you know, Kyer Elam on a bounce back, if Trayvon Diggs comes back, you know, after missing some time, and if he's healthy and ready to go, then this is a team that with that offense, you know, could do some things, right? But, you know, if the secondary is hurt, if Kyer Elam goes back to Buffalo ability, and, you know, it's just things that kind of don't come into fruition, then I can see an offense and the trio that you mentioned that's going to have to shoot out some people in order to make some plays and win some games.
Do you have any confidence that Trayvon Diggs could be ready sooner rather than later?
It's a good question, because if you asked me that last year, like, I was a little apprehensive to kind of go that route, and then it kind of proved me wrong until it didn't. So I wonder if kind of what happened with last year or two in terms of him being ahead of schedule and coming back and, you know, something else didn't go right. Like, I just wonder if that's in the back of the mind of the Cowboys and Trayvon Diggs trying to get a guy that's fully healthy and ready to go, you know, and to not have any setbacks. You know, I saw some clips, like, he's looking good, but I think that there's going to be a more safe than sorry approach with him a little bit, you know, heading into the season. But I think that's going to be another fascinating question as training camp goes, is how much are we going to see of Savone Revel? I would expect to see a good amount, you know, in terms of when he's ready to go, and how much can Trayvon Diggs kind of be ahead of schedule. I think those are storylines that we're going to have to follow as well.
Do you think they're headed for another year where they're like bottom third or maybe bottom five in all the, you know, defensive stats and analytics?
I don't. But I think it kind of goes back to a lot of the acquisitions they made. You know, I mean, if Kenneth Murray, you know, is the guy that can be that kind of electric, you know, kind of, you know, will linebacker that comes downhill and kind of is what DeMar Van Overshown brought last year and can harness that athletic ability, I think that's great for him. But if he's the guy that gets lost in coverage and, you know, is struggling, then, you know, I think that could be kind of a weakness for them. And then you pair what happens in the secondary. You know, Donovan Wilson wasn't ready to go yet. I mean, obviously there's confidence that he will be. You know, Malik Hooker dealt with some injuries in minicamp. Again, confidence he will be. But, you know, there's just question marks all over that defense. And I think, you know, when you talk about their run defense, that's just going to be another big factor. And, you know, I think in terms of defensively, like, Micah Parsons' pass rush is something I'll never worry about, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing I've kind of talked about with people in terms of what could Micah Parsons actually miss out on by not being at practice, and people say, you know, maybe it's just the football shape ability, quote unquote, of battling in the run game. You know, so yeah. If Micah signs a deal, you know, before, you know, the Wednesday before they play Philly, you know, and next thing you know, Philly's got Saquon running right at him and, you know, Jordan Mailata and a couple other guys doing their thing. It's, you know, I tend to wonder how that would affect Micah Parsons in a holdout. So they have the talent and the ability to be better than they were defensively, I think, last year. But the question marks remain, and I think we're going to need some answers there before we can declare them, you know, being better in Matt Eberflus's system.
You've got your pre-training camp roster projections out. What was the toughest part putting that together?
Honestly, it's kind of like, where do you put more, you know, resources in terms of positions, right? And I think, you know, the other thing too is the annual CJ Goodwin question too of like, hey, you know, can you afford to have a roster spot for a guy that only plays special teams? You know, you have a new special teams coordinator, you know, you got, he's, you know, the second longest tenured Cowboy there is, but, you know, is there still enough there to warrant that? I think that's always going to be an annual question. I think safeties too is the interesting one because, you know, if you look at what the Cowboys have done in undrafted free agency, usually the guy that gets the highest signing bonus and the highest kind of contract, that's the guy that has a chance to make the team. We saw it with Brevin Spanford mm-hmm. last year, right? Well, that's Elijah Clark this year. And Justin Barron was close behind him, the linebacker from Syracuse. But Elijah Clark, also from Syracuse, is a guy that, you know, they targeted. He was a priority. You know, but can they carry five safeties? Can he be enough of a special teams mm-hmm. asset to warrant that spot too? I think that's where I'm watching. And then that sixth receiver spot is going to be fun to watch in terms of training camp battles because I think you can pretty much pencil in the top five there. And of course there's never a guarantee they always go with six, but you know, they have a lot of potential guys between Paris Campbell, Ryan Flournoy, Jalen Brooks. There's a lot of guys contending for that six wide receiver spot to try to make this team. So that was probably the toughest part.
Joseph Hoyt, congrats on your move back to the Dallas Morning News, and we'll see you in Oxnard, sir.
Yeah, appreciate it, fellas. Maybe we'll get a chance to watch some Animal House too.
Oh, well, let's do Animal House and, you know, maybe some Rudder Room.
Rudder Room,
be good.
Sure.
We'll see you there soon. Joseph Hoyt, must follow on Cowboys Twitter there for you. We'll do the C-note, talk about what's been making headlines and some of the top audio around America's team coming up next year in the nation. Here we go. It's hour number four of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. 6 days from Cowboys beginning training camp. Brian Broaddus will be out there next week reporting for us from Oxnard along with the KMC Masterpiece. Then we're going to be out there the following week. It is definitely training camp season. I got some Cowboys content here for you. Okay? Dak Prescott, who got it right? The players or the reporters? Morning News has a story up about it. ESPN had him out of their top 10, not even in the honorable mentions for his position. Players had him 79th. Okay, that's the premise of it. The way things went in two of the last 3 years, plus the injury history, is it fair to say this could be it? Like, even if you're a giant Dak believer in his prime, looking at two of the last 3 years, looking at how bad last season was with those eight picks, couldn't this be it? I mean,
I think it's going to be hard to put it on him just for one reason.
What's that?
The head coach. We got to figure out what this head coach is going to do scheme wise. Yeah. If this head coach plays run up field and run hook routes all day,
yeah,
and doesn't really try and run the ball or not successful, and then they don't try and do anything to help him, then I think it's going to be really, really hard to put on this quarterback. And I'm not doing it just as an apologist for the quarterback, but I am going into this like with my eyes completely wide open that Schottenheimer convinced Jerry and Steven that he can get the absolute best out of Dak. And if
wasn't Dak also a big advocate for Shoddy?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe because he didn't want to learn something different, or maybe all of a sudden Shoddy was walking up to Dak at practice and like going, "Listen, I know the game plan sucks this week. I know this is going to not be really conducive to how you need to play football, but you got to fight through it today." You know? So I'm going to say if Shoddy turns into a bad, or I should say, poor OC or poor designer, or we get these coaches that like they're over their heads, it's hard to blame the quarterback for that. You got to blame the front office for hiring the head coach.
Sure. I mean, the reason I'd be willing to call it, though, is because you would have been looking at three different guys, Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy, and then Brian Schottenheimer, Clayton Adams combo that he had struggled under. That's a pretty big sample size over a four-year period.
If he struggles under this guy, I have a lot of my feeling, again, you can say whatever you'd like to say, and I'm totally cool with that. But I'm thinking, like, if this head coach, he's got to help this guy. And it's going to be very, very hard to be able to evaluate him if this head coach is not a very good play caller.
Yeah, but he hasn't had a good play caller his entire career, and he still had good seasons. So if he can't do it with this, then it shows that there has been regression because you have been good in
then
the past.
Then if that's
with
the case,
crap.
if he looks like that he is not very mobile and he's making more turnovers and all that, that's what you can evaluate him on.
Right.
But you could also say, I mean, they've given him the best chance with this wide receiver core that he's got. I mean, if you start to talk about Pickens.
Totally.
And, you got two legit. You got a good wide.
I mean,
good tight end.
They literally brought Pickens in here with no hope of probably signing him. I don't think there's going to be hope there's going to sign Pickens here.
Agreed.
They brought him in here to try and help. Like somebody, whether it's Dak or Shoddy or somebody, convinced the Joneses to go get Pickens.
Yeah.
You know, that's somebody did. And it, like I say, but if he rolls out there and he looks bad and he doesn't look like he's very mobile and he's struggling with the reads and all that, I can't fight you guys on that.
So then
the offense sucks. If the offense design and execution of it or planning of it sucks, I think we'll be able to tell that. I think we'll be able to tell. Eric will be on our Monday morning going, "Why are we running the ball here? We can't block them here. We can't. Our tight ends can't do this. Our backs can't do this." You know, there's going to be ability to sit down and watch and say, the scheme looks god awful for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, but he's not helping himself because he had this throw and this throw he could have made.
Which we're probably going to do anyway, because I think our favorite thing to do as fans and in sports media is go ahead and nitpick on the offensive play calling. We love to do that, and it's fair. But I'm just it's just frustrating when you see other quarterbacks, and we're so just in a cowboy microscope that, like, who does Josh Allen have to throw to last year with Buffalo? And he had an MVP season. Khalil Shakir is his top wide receiver. Like, you're in year 10 now. You've got CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens and Jake Ferguson, and you just took an offensive lineman in the first round. You've got three first-rounders on the offensive line. And I get it. He's the front office paid him, and it's not a perfect situation. But I'm done with the excuse making here, man. It's go out there and
do it. What if I tell you he's not as good as Josh Allen?
He's not. We know he's not.
Okay, well, then is that his fault?
No, it's not. The organization needs to figure it out.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He's never been that guy.
No, but now he's got more to work with than I'd say any of those quarterbacks.
Actually, we say help him all the time.
And
he needs every bit of help that he can get. He's not an elite quarterback. He's not.
I agree.
And so with that being said, though, if the play caller sucks, you know, and the scheme sucks, Does that, I mean, we got to help him, right?
I'd say that's on him too, because I got Bobby who will go on air and say he fought for Brian Schottenheimer.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then Dak, don't complain if the offense sucks, because you wanted that guy.
Okay.
So, hey, that's definitely the Joneses' fault. They hired him.
That's right.
But it's also the quarterback's fault for putting faith in him when he's had 2 years to know kind of what he's going to want.
If that's the case, then too, like, I'm in this situation because I didn't like the way that Brian Schottenheimer got hired. I hate the way that the Cowboys hire their coaches. I do. I appreciate Brian Schottenheimer not hiring his buddies, though, to try and, you know, to make us have to go through that. But I'm going to say this. If the head coach is bad, the quarterback's likely going to be bad. And then now the front office is going to have to wear both. And then Dawson, we're going to have to ask then, okay, can we make a decision on Dak?
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's the Cam Newton take. Like, it's a make or break year for Dak. You're locked into this deal for 3 years after this. So if he does play poorly, right, if the media is right, leaving him out of all the top of their rankings, the only thing you would have next year is we have to get a great left tackle and a great running back to try to save this. And that might mean skimping more on defense.
Oh, you might be moving on, though. There might be some people like that just say, well, he's not that good. I mean, you have to do more for him. You have to
hold on. Do you think they could move on?
Oh, I think you could.
It's $100 million of dead money. What? You're punting on the entire season.
You want to get another quarterback?
I would love to. I just don't think the Joneses would. I think they would dig in and think we need better players around him, even better.
You've tried. Yeah. You've already tried. You used a first round pick on a guard again. You keep drafting offensive linemen in the first round. What else can you do for the guy?
I would hit a left tackle in round one and a running back in round two.
Yeah, they tried to hit a left tackle in round one, but it was pick 27.
But I'm saying now we're in the 2026 spring after Dak plays poorly.
I think if I had a high opportunity, I wouldn't get a left tackle. I'd go get a quarterback. I wouldn't. Same. If you give me the ninth overall pick, like Pro Football Focus.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. You got 3 years of Dak's contract left, and you want a young quarterback?
Eat it.
It's going to take you 2 years to eat it.
Eat it.
The only way the Cowboys win a Super Bowl is with a quarterback on his rookie deal without
If you know he can't play, move on. If you know he can't play, you just have to move on.
Well, I don't think you will know that. I think what you would know if this year struggles is our protection and running game isn't good enough. Like last year, they were horrible running the ball, and they couldn't protect him well enough to give him time and space to throw the ball. And I don't think they've done enough this year to change that, right? You got the same left tackle
situation.
Well, then
he's going to be awful again, right?
I think
you're thinking?
I think this might be a real struggle
well, then,
year.
Why do you keep wanting to keep the guy around? And I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying in general, why would you want to keep doing this then? I mean, if you're going to have the ninth overall pick or one of the top 10 pick, I think you have to look at a quarterback. We've seen teams eat large amounts of money. Look at the Denver Broncos. Ate huge money. They got a quarterback, it looks like.
$85 million.
Yeah.
And dead money that they ate on Russell Wilson.
I mean, that would be ideal if we could do that. I think you gotta operate in the real world too, where Jerry Jones wouldn't.
Well, then we should not even talk about team building with this team because they won't do anything that helps them to be better at team building. They won't do anything that, you know, because we shouldn't talk about what it shouldn't matter then if Dak plays good or not. Yeah. Because they're never going to do anything in order to make that change. You know, they could keep drafting players and adding players and all that, but, you know, it's if they're not willing to sacrifice things that they don't think are going to work, then it's not even worth talking about, but that's what we do. I'm just saying it in a way that, like, we could get mad at Dak all we want.
I don't want to get mad at Dak. No, he's doing his best.
I could say.
I want to get mad at the front office for not giving him the run game Josh Allen had.
The front office will not do anything different. But like I said, if it was me, I'm trying to help Dak right now, but I don't think they helped him with the right guard. I don't know about the left tackle. You know, I don't know if that's, you know, hopefully he's going to come around. But if I'm sitting there with a top 10 pick and I have a chance to draft a quarterback because I don't think the one I have can play, I'll do it, but they won't. You're right.
I mean, what happened in 2023, you know, that was so good? It was MVP. He didn't have a great second wide receiver that year. But what you had was a healthy Tyron Smith and Tony Pollard running the ball better. You know, to me, that's what I want to recreate. Because if 25 is bad, 24 was bad, and 22 is bad, you will say 3 out of the last 4 years were bad. But then you have that 2023 sitting in there. I would say we got to create that. And by the way, Tyron Smith was second team All-Pro that year.
You know, I would think we don't have to move on and eat all of this contract. What we need to do, unfortunately, is take away some of the money we're spending on defense and reinvest that back in the offensive
line. Well, then we're going to sit here and complain that we can't
be good enough.
Yeah, then we're going to complain that they don't stop the run, and then they don't play well enough in the secondary, and that's fine. I mean, but to me, it's not fine. It's like, you know, if you determine that Schottenheimer and Dak are not good enough, I'm not sitting here waiting around. I'm just not.
Because you have championship standards.
Well, the thing about it was, and this is where I think that guys like yourself, Chief, that fought me on this daily about, listen, I'm moving on from this guy before it even gets to this point. I think you guys are right. I'll give you your flowers for that. I will give you guys flowers for standing up and saying, listen, I would not sign this guy. I don't care. I'm not going to sign this guy. And so, you know, that's you were right. You're absolutely right about that. Because if it's not good enough, then go ahead. You eat the $100 million. But we know damn good and well they won't eat the $100 million. They won't.
No, they won't. And at least a team like Denver, who I guess did that with Russell Wilson.
Hell yeah, they did.
They had a ready-made best defense in the league. They at least had that to lean on. And then
maybe this pass rush is going to be good enough. And maybe Revell and Bland and others are going to be good enough to where you take the Denver plan and do this.
But then you also have to make sure like they went and got the best possible coach that they felt like they could get. And I don't know that the Cowboys...
They unfortunately won't do that.
I understand Dawson, like part of the reason why you feel like they couldn't do and capitalize on the lightning in a bottle of what they had in 2016 is because they were still paying Romo.
Yeah.
And so then you get into the same situation. Mm-hmm. So I understand wanting to slow play the next quarterback because you want to make sure that when you do have that guy, one, you got a top prospect. It wasn't a fourth round pick that fell into your lap. You sucked the year before bad enough to where you're going to get one of the best prospects in a draft. And two, that's the only quarterback money you're spending. And now you have the opportunity to fill out a roster around him. That's how you capitalize. But when you have the rookie quarterback on the cheap, but at the same time, for the first 2 years of the rookie quarterback, you're paying a buttload of money for the previous mistake. Like, there is part of it.
You got to walk your way out of this, though.
You've got to figure out a way to do it. The Eagles move on from Wentz. Then they go ahead and say, hey, we're going to pivot. We're going to go to Hurts. Like, there's a way, right? We can go ahead and build all these roadblocks all you want. The good organizations find ways. Now, I agree. The elephant in the room is that the Dallas Cowboys have not proven to be a good organization. They're not. The way that they team build for 30 years has obviously failed. Now, we can go ahead and look at all the all-pros they've drafted, and I believe Will McClay and the scouts, I've said this time and time again, they're the backbone of the organization.
Great job.
And the reason why they're competitive. When it comes to signing contracts, they suck at managing the cap. They wait to the last minute. They overpay for everybody. So that's not going to change. How does it change? When you get a generational quarterback. When Joe Burrow is there and you draft him in 30 years of disgust in Cincinnati becomes, we're going to the Super Bowl in year two. We're going to the AFC title game in year three. Washington's the laughingstock of the NFL. You draft Jaden Daniels, we have hope. How does that happen? You take a quarterback in the top five of the draft. The Cowboys haven't taken a first-round pick at quarterback since 1989. It's going to have to happen here eventually, and there's no point in just waiting. If they suck this year, they got to do it. Next year maybe is the year that you have a good quarterback class.
Man, I do think you're on it there, like settling for Romo and settling for Dak. But at the same time, Joe Burrow wins 8 games last year.
Sure.
You know, putting on that show.
That's why it's still the ultimate team sport. But he's at least so damn good that he's going to give you a shot every year.
I teased this earlier, Chief, and I want to get into it. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. Should Dak get sloppy? You know, maybe not sloppy, but just like less... etched out of stone.
Less lean.
You know, and you, I think trainers and bodybuilders and workout people, they are right in saying, hey, the best way to support your frame is to build lean, dense muscle, and it's going to support all of our connective tissues and our bones and our soft tissues because the muscles are doing all the work. But I think once you have that injury, the chain has significant weaknesses in it. And if you try to fire at 100% or if you try to get more explosive than you've ever been, you're just asking that chain to pop on one of those links. And I think that's why we've seen calf. I think that's why we've seen shoulder. I think that's why we've seen hamstring. Like a lot of it is in, you know, that.
Well, he was a sloppy, sweaty quarterback in 16.
See? Big guy.
Yeah.
Mahomes,
he was a thick body armored guy that was a, you know, I always said this about him. Played his best when he was bloodied and muddied.
You know, that's how he was.
Okay. And then look at how Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson are running now compared to when they first came in. They were violent, quick runners, like in a hurry to get somewhere. Now they're cruising, right?
Yeah.
Because they understand that explosive movement, trying to get away, trying to get the extra 2 yards. That's when the injuries happen. When someone's hanging onto my leg and I'm leaning, Dak's leg broke. Was trying to fight off a tackler from behind. Was that a horse collar tackle? I'm not sure, but it was close to it. You know, like these moments where quarterbacks are lunging and leaning and trying to explode. That's not what you want. I think Dak and the trainer are thinking, we got to get light and lean so I can be mobile in the pocket. And instead of that, I would say, get flexible, get the body armor. Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Mahomes, Brady, Jared Goff right now. I mean, the guy probably doesn't even want to take his shirt off at the beach. Yeah. You know, you don't need to be able to take your shirt off at the beach to be a great quarterback. And and maybe, just maybe, if you've had that leg injury, it's actually setting you up for a higher chance at injury.
He's looking lean as hell right now. So
it looks good.
We'll see.
I bet his wife's happy.
Absolutely.
All righty. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. We'll hit the expressway. We got G-Bag of the Day coming up, and then LA Live's coming up at 5:40 here on 105.3 The Fan. I have to chat Window Nation with you. Before we get there, though, you've been trying to stay cool during the dog days of summer like me, and every time you look at your thermostat, you can't believe it. Just, it can't get down to the target, you know? That could be because your windows are old, and it's not hard to do. You know, 7-8 years into a home, especially if you had builder-grade windows installed, it can cost you hundreds, if not thousands, every year on your energy bill. So as you feel this Texas heat, I mean, sometimes it's getting so hot, you think it's going to burn the roof up, but you know, your windows are actually our number one line of defense against the elements, and if they're letting that heat in, you will definitely see that on your monthly energy bill. And right now, Window Nation is offering 50% off all window styles plus zero interest for 5 whole years. So when you choose Window Nation to replace your windows, you're going to save big. No interest till 2030, and these top quality strong vinyl windows can withstand this Texas heat, unlike the aluminum ones that get too hot to even touch. And did I mention, they'll get the job done in 1 day or less. That's how Window Nation does it. They are the best. Their install crews have over a decade of experience minimum, so you can feel comfortable knowing your windows are installed right the first time. 866-90-NATION, 50% off all new windows. Pay no interest till 2030. WindowNation.com, 866-90-NATION. Eddie's.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. I got more Cowboys questions that matter as we waste away waiting for training camp, although we are just, what, 4 days away?
From what?
From heading off to Dallas Cowboys training camp. And then the G-Bag Nation and Sean and RJ will be there the week after us. We've got you covered forward, backward, sideways, and every other way for Dallas Cowboys training camp. That's right. I said what I said. And I'm going to start with this question. Can the Dallas Cowboys break out of their explosive rushing funk? Now, an explosive rushing play, as defined by me, is 12-plus yards.
Ooh.
Last year, I was actually impressed by this. Cowboys are not dead last in this. They're only fourth fewest rushing.
They were only 22nd in giving up most explosives.
Yeah. Well, that's not great.
22nd.
Which is...
They gave up the least. The 22nd least.
I mean, that's better than I would have guessed. But yeah, when we have the 29th most, that still doesn't square.
Right. No, you're right.
And so... this is where kind of, I think, Jaden Blue, I would assume for a lot of people, comes into the conversation. Because if you look simply back at his play in college, he has a 27.4% missed tackle rate. I don't think he's going to get a ton of touches, but when he does, he clearly brings something to the table that's different than everybody else. But this question is not only about him. My question is, do you think they can move up even to, like, maybe not average, but closer to the average explosive rushing play in the league?
I think there's a chance they could be more, by far more than average.
Ooh.
It definitely does have to do with Blue first. Because I would expect when he touches the ball, every fourth or fifth time he touches the ball, you get a pretty significant play. But I'm not saying that he's going to have that many touches.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I stand on that. Javonte Williams, I have no clue.
Right.
But again, if he can make one cut, just one cut, dude, you're going to be fine. Last year, watching him run into piles for Denver, I was like, oh, no, this isn't good for him. But if he can make a cut, he can get upfield to the next level. Obviously, the offensive line's a huge factor here. And sure. I don't know if anybody's listened to what I've said about this, but I feel like if the offensive line is good, this Cowboys team is going to be better than good. Because so I think that they can set up for big explosive plays downfield. I don't think it's going to be the same type of offense as it typically is because of the people that have been brought in to build this offense. And they have different, unique, fun ideas for the run game. It has to be the strength of the team because I think you have to protect your quarterback. Your quarterback can't run around. He right. can't be touched. Like there's just a lot of things with Dak Prescott you have to protect now, and that's unfortunate because you're stuck there, but at the same time, it does provide, well, guys, y'all have to do your jobs at your best, and the Cowboys have to be a strong running team in order to get the best out of Dak Prescott. But I believe they can do that. And, Kevin, I did a study when Zeke was a rookie that when the Cowboys, during that Jason Garrett offense, when the Cowboys had a play on any given drive that was 12 yards or more, they scored 85% of the time.
Yeah.
And it was 79% touchdowns. So, like, that's where it is when you have plays like that, it flips the field. It changes everything about what your offensive drive is going to be. And if you can get it from the run game, it makes your passing game that much better.
Alec, can the Cowboys break out of their explosive running funk?
I think so, and I don't know how much success it's going to lead to or any of that, but I do think, again, I've said this a few times now, not to sound like a broken record, but I think the staff and the system that's being implemented here is going to lend itself to more opportunities. It's going to be more inviting to that because you did, as Corey mentioned, you added Jaden Blue, who I think yep. is going to be, I think they're going to have plays that are going to be expected for him to be in the game and for him to get space. And I think you're going to see the guards pulling for him. I think you're going to see some concepts where it's going to be, hey, if he can get a running start, then we're probably going to be in green yardage here. I think that's going to allow that to happen more, but I do think the play action is going to be a big part of this offense, which is going to lend itself to maybe some better looks that they're going to expect some different things defensively. And I do think that you're going to see a little bit more. Again, I don't know if the run game is going to be perfect, but I do think you'll see more chunk plays.
Now, this next one's about Micah Parsons, and I hope the way I phrase this question makes sense. Whether it's because he still hasn't got paid or maybe he got all of the money, do you think Micah's play on the field this season will be impacted by his contract? So, like, let's assume even if he doesn't get paid, he's still on the field. Do you think that will drive him to be better? Do you think maybe his contract will drive him to be better? Maybe worse because he's got all the guaranteed money? Like, do you think Micah's play this year will be impacted at all by this contract?
If it doesn't get done, I think he might. There's two complete separate ways he could go.
For sure.
One is pouty baby.
Yeah.
And you know what? Treat me better. The other one is I'll show you. And those are the two. I think that's the only two options there. And so the other side, though, when he gets paid, I think he's the kind of person that when he gets paid, he plays harder.
Okay. Yeah,
I think his men, and hearing him talk right now is probably the thing that's really getting to me right now. He wants to be a leader. He's telling himself it's his time to lead. He's telling everybody else it's his time to lead, and he can't necessarily do it because of the part of agents and owners and the negotiation. He's caught in between.
Yeah.
I want to go do this.
Yeah.
And they're like, don't, because it'll screw things up if you get hurt. And he's like, but he'll hit people. And so, like, that's where he's kind of caught in between this right now. But I think that he's the kind of player that he gets paid and he's like, great, that's great. Now that that's done, let's get back to my career.
Okay. Alec?
Yeah, I'm right there with Corey because if he keeps this mentality that he has right now, which I think he's been handling it the right way.
I do too.
And I'm more than impressed with it. I'm not really surprised by it. But you have seen a lot around the league of turmoil. You know, you see the Terry McLaurin situation where he's openly telling reporters, hey, this sucks. You know?
Yeah.
And he could do that. And he would be totally right for that. But yeah, I'm right there with Corey that I think this has been handled the right way. And I don't see any other reason to believe not.
Bonus, Mike, a question. What does he actually have to do to win Defensive Player of the Year?
20 sacks.
Is that the magic number for you?
I think that'd be a magic number. I don't think if he got to 20, I don't think anybody would say no.
Could you see what would be the equivalent? Let me ask, what would be the equivalent then if he had, like, let's say 15 sacks, 4 forced fumbles, and 4 fumble recoveries?
That's amazing. I love it. Now, sure, I'll take that too.
Is that okay?
A sexy pick.
Okay.
I think you know, it's.
I think you're right about the 20.
Does he have an interception, or did he finally get his interception last year? I can't remember. But he's,
I thought he did.
If he can force fumbles too, wrong. In addition to that, if he's forcing fumbles and he's maybe gets a touchdown, you know, maybe he gets one of those, picks up and runs it back for a touchdown. Like, those things could, you know, will add to the level. Go look at J.J. Watt's years.
Yeah.
How many times? Go look at the amount of swats he had.
Yeah.
The pass deflections. Like, those are the other things. It wasn't just him getting sacks. Aaron Donald, same thing. Not just getting sacks. Being a wrecking ball to offensive plans. That's what those guys got those for, because you just couldn't stop them. It wasn't ultimately the sacks, everything. It was all the other things. Khalil Max had those types of years where you're just like,
right.
Dude, he had a strip sack, fumble, touchdown, all the things in one.
Right.
I think it was an interception also at the same time. I don't know how it works, but it did. So I think it's going to take a big number, but if not, all the other things that encompass creating great defense, I think, could be a factor for him.
I would like to agree, but I feel like he's going to be a victim of the sack total. No matter what the, you know, tackles for loss looks like, if he does get a pick, which he doesn't have one in his career yet.
Okay.
So even if he does get his first and he has a bazillion tackles for loss and, you know, 15 sacks, if, you know, TJ Watt, let's just throw his name out there because he's a really good pass rusher. If he ends up getting 19 and a half sacks, then people are going to look at that number first and be like, boom. There's your AP Defensive Player of the Year right there. Or if Patrick Surtain goes out there and has double-digit interceptions and his passer rating allowed, you know, and then he could go back-to-back, you know, for all I care. But I think he's going to fall victim to the sack total.
I think he's got a good point, too.
What
I just want to point that out.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Did you like the bonus question?
Dude, whenever they would give me the extra credit question on tests, I always hated that because I was like, I have to answer it. So that's extra work I have to do now, all right? But on top of that, if I don't get it right, I felt like I failed. So if I only got 100 on my test and I didn't get 125 or whatever it was.
Wow, that's a heck of an extra credit question.
Must be nice.
Then I was furious.
Hey, Alec, I'm going to start with you on this.
Oh, no.
No particular reason.
I'm scared.
What do you expect from the backup quarterback spot for the Cowboys this year? Bonus question.
No, what are you doing? That's two bonus questions.
Could the Cowboys keep only two quarterbacks?
Corey in the war against work.
I just like his scenario because maybe you got a 75, but you got that extra credit. Dude, and you got 100.
What teachers did you have?
Yeah, I because love it.
In comparison, mine need to catch up a little bit. You know, I want to say I expect nothing because Dak plays all the games.
Sure.
That would be wonderful. I expect them to play 2 games. That's going to be my expectation going in. So if they do play any games, I'm like, well, I expected it. So I'm going to say they play 2 games. Hopefully one of them is because the last game of the year is meaningless. That would be really nice. But I'm expecting, because of maybe, you know, a hamstring, you know, like tightness situation or lower back tightness kind of thing. It's like, we'll just sit them for a couple weeks. It's okay. And then I do think that they carry 3. I think they end up carrying 3 because, you know, Will Greer at least has the experience of playing in the NFL for a few years now. Joe Milton has the wow factor of, if we needed him, if Dak goes out in the third quarter, he could potentially win a game for you just because of his athleticism alone. So I think for those reasons, they carry three, and then if it doesn't work, if it's just a blaze of glorious incomplete passes, then you can throw in Will Greer and say, hey, let's settle down the offense a little bit.
They will be glorious incomplete passes, won't they? All right, Corey, you only have to answer one of these questions if you want.
What was the question again?
Oh, my God. Now you have to answer them both. What do you expect from the quarterbacks, from the backup quarterback spot this season? Mm-hmm. And do you think Dallas could only keep two quarterbacks?
Expect a game or two.
Okay.
I think Alec is right. Like, the hope is that it's just the end of the season. But I think this season's going right up to the last second. Like, I think for the Cowboys, they're going to have to do everything they can to get into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to get away with just carrying two, though. I think they like their quarterback room. Schottenheimer actually continues to talk about how much he likes this room. And quite honestly, Milton isn't experienced enough yet to just go, if something was to happen to Dak, just he's fine in that room by himself.
Yeah.
So I think Will Greer being around is a key factor for him because they like the conversations that happen between those guys.
See, and I'm with you guys on that. I just wondered because you run out of those roster spots so quickly if they would try to cut that corner. But I'm with you guys on the three.
Yeah.
All right. Next Cowboys question for you. Is Marist Liafau ready to take over the middle of the field, become a true badass and real fan favorite?
I hope so. At the position, I just this team needs a cerebral, an area that's just, he's the brain of it all.
Yeah.
And he sees it better than everybody. He knows what to expect. Last year, I think what we saw, and we talk about hair on fire all the time, and the more I say I see that written too. So that's really nice to see that what we're seeing is the same thing everybody else is seeing. But we talk about that, and that's great. The athleticism, it's great. But whenever you got to be smarter. The best linebackers on the field know, anticipate better. They got things figured out. They don't get beat. They know the gaps to be in. Why did we not like Jalen Smith? He had no clue what gap he was supposed to be in. So, yes, I think this is, I hope so, because I think this, he's got the athleticism to do it. Whether or not it clicks for him with this new defense this year, but I think it will. I think it's going to be a simple enough defense that he can make them some great things happen.
Alec, I'll let you wrap it up.
You got to be smart is the absolute right thing to say about him from Corey. And the good thing is that is coachable. That is 100% teachable. I think he has everything else that you can't teach. The hair on fire aspect, that energy that he brings, you can't teach that. That's something that you either have or you don't. And that's an intangible that I love to see at that position specifically. You know, that's why I like an Eric Kendricks so much, you know, last year, because he is so smart, but it felt like he had that energy too.
Yeah.
He might not be the fastest guy on the field. He might not be the most athletic guy on the field. But he had that energy and he had the knowledge. If he can combine those two, then that will be a truth this season.
I noticed the look on your face when I asked that question. You looked genuinely kind of excited about that prospect.
Yeah, he's one of the few players on this team that hasn't really established himself yet that I'm genuinely excited for because I think he does have the ability to be something.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes?
Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.